Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And also a reminder that we're brought to you today by Donors Trust. Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, and additional donor privacy. Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. And Jim, let's start with our good martini as always. Yesterday, of course, we talked about the Politico story in which those loyal to the Service Employees International Union tried to leave Iowa and go to Michigan to help Hillary Clinton because they heard things were slipping away there. And the Hillary Clinton campaign told them very rudely, no, get back to Iowa. We need to keep our fake operation going there. You'll be happy to know the Clinton campaign has responded to that story by saying, nuh-uh, it was totally Jim Comey and the Russians. So on to the next infighting inside the Clinton circle. This is courtesy of Vanity Fair by way of Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air. The knives are out in Clinton world. Vanity Fair's William Cohen writes, and they may take aim at a surprising target, Huma Abedin. Here's one of the people quoted in the story. Quote, maybe I'm just ticked off, but I really don't give a darn about what happens to Huma, to be honest with you, one close advisor to Hillary Clinton told me recently. He was irked in particular at Abedin's seemingly superfluous breach of decorum during a post-election event. On the day after Hillary Clinton's stunning loss to Donald Trump, this person said Abedin appeared within the rope line while Clinton greeted her morose and woebegone supporters. You're staff, okay? This advisor continued. Staff is staff. You're not a principal. But amid Clinton's stunning post-election hangover, some inside the Clinton circle wonder if Abedin became overwhelmed by the attention and shut too many people out. They talked about the inner circle shutting down different ideas, like showing her gregarious side by, for example, appearing more often on The View. She appeared once, but Bernie Sanders, her rival for the nomination, appeared a handful of times. According to this person, however, the inner circle nixed that idea. It seemed, this person elaborated, that even minor suggestions about changing the narrative fell on deaf ears. Right away, this person continued, it was either regarded as an intrusion or a naive suggestion, or maybe someone has an agenda, and so people just stopped bothering. Where in most presidential campaigns, the circle grows broader and broader, hers grew smaller and smaller. And as Ed Morrissey points out, there might be a little bitterness over the fact that it's Anthony Weiner's emails that led to the Comey letter in the last couple of weeks of the campaign. So, Jim, it's fun to watch all the finger-pointing going on, and so far, no lessons seem to be learned at all.
Yeah, and maybe there are useful lessons for those of us who are not absorbed in a Clintonian cult of personality. Way back when Huma Abedin became first kind of a publicly known name to folks in politics, I think it was Dave Weigel, who's now at the Post, might have been at Slate at the time, who kind of said, you know, you see a lot of glowing profile pieces on Huma Abedin. And in fact, almost every reference to her you could find in the press was glowing and talked about how she's, you know, so important to Hillary's operations and she's so brilliant and obviously very stylish and attractive and just went on and on gushing about her. And he had, you know, kind of like the emperor's new clothes. Weigel asked, so what has she done that makes her so extraordinary? I mean, she just seemed like a competent administrator, which admittedly may seem rare in Washington. But he felt like there was this enormous disproportionate level of this, and this sneaking suspicion that most of the profiles of Huma Abedin were source greasers. You want her to talk to you more, so you write this glowing profile to kind of suck up to her. I think, you know, it's good to see the knives out in the Clinton camp. It's good to see the finger pointing, because this is the time for finger pointing. There is genuine finger pointing to be done, because as much as you and I may enjoy laughing at Hillary Clinton, and we probably will for a really long time, Greg, that she really was poorly served by her staff. Like, if she really was walking around believing that she had this in the bag and that she didn't need to allocate any resources in Michigan and she didn't really need to allocate any resources in Wisconsin, and there was no need to do campaign stops in Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania was in the bag, and all these, you know, Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, all these states were looking good. And not, look, the last thing you have to do is worry about is a state like Minnesota. She ended up winning by 1 point. You know, these people have egg on their faces, and they should have egg on their faces. And it seems like a fair question of If Huma is this, you know, look, we've all made, you know, jokes about her awful taste in men and things like that. But just kind of an observation that, like, well, was the Clinton team really that good at all? And I think it's a really fair question. It's not just, you know, Trump was good or Trump, the RNC's get out the vote operation was pretty good. We had all heard about how fantastic the get out the vote operation of the Clinton campaign was. And in the end, their voters didn't show up. There should be a lot of this. And so I kind of am, just for the sake of history, I want to hear, this is one of those rare circumstances in which I really want to hear the campaign memoirs of all the Robbie Mooks, if only they had listened to me, coming to bookstores next year. I kind of want to hear all the bloodletting, not just because, you know, it'll be very entertaining for us, because I think the world needs to see how unexpected how people can be blind to a looming problem and the dangers of groupthink and arrogance and things like that.
Yeah, if you've read any stories in the last couple of days about how John Podesta allegedly fell victim to this phishing scheme, it's not hard to realize that this might not have been the brightest bulbs in the chandelier in this particular campaign. As much as they were highly touted, as many famous names as there were in there, like Podesta, like Aberdeen, like Karen Finney, and on and on and on, turns out they weren't quite as vaunted as we thought.
Not even the most state-of-the-art cyber defense system in the entire world can save you if your password is password.
All right. Speaking of cyber defenses, let's move on to our bad martini today. And, of course, we've seen unnamed sources from senior levels of the government talking to the New York Times and the Washington Post. First, it was Russia meddled in the elections. Then it was Russia specifically meddled to help Donald Trump, which only the CIA says, the FBI and the DNI not saying that. Now there's reports this morning that personally Vladimir Putin got involved in this. His fingerprints personally are all over this. Well, not surprisingly, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee would like to get some answers, but he's having a hard time. This is from USA Today. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes on Wednesday blasted as unacceptable the refusal of the FBI, CIA, and national intelligence directors to brief his panel on the Russian cyber attacks that occurred during the presidential campaign. Nunes had requested that National Intelligence Director James Clapper, with participation from FBI Director James Comey and CIA Director John Brennan, brief committee members in a closed session on Thursday. That briefing has now been canceled. The California Republican, in a letter sent to Clapper on Monday, said he wanted clarification about why the CIA is now saying that Russian hacks of political campaign committees earlier this year appeared to be aimed at helping President-elect Donald Trump and hurting Democrat Hillary Clinton. It's unacceptable, he says, that the intelligence community directors would not fulfill the House Intelligence Committee's request to be briefed tomorrow on the cyber attacks that occurred during the presidential campaign. However, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said that senior administration officials have regularly provided extensive, detailed, classified and unclassified briefings to members and staff from both parties since the summer, yada, yada, yada. Jim, so a lot of leaking with nobody's name behind it in major papers throughout the past several days. But when it comes to actually presenting facts, oh, man, we just can't fit that into our schedule. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, when this story broke earlier this week, Greg, I had the observation of thinking, like, look, if this – I can't – as much as I find it very plausible – that Russia was up to no good, that they were deliberately trying to influence the election, and that, you know, maybe even they genuinely wanted to elect Trump. They didn't like Hillary Clinton. Although you and I would look at her record and say, why? You know, Madame Reset Button was too tough on you? Really? That's kind of a high bar to clear. But the idea being that, look, if we're really going to make policy changes based on the accusation that Russia tried to elect Trump, then we need to see the evidence, meaning we, the American people. We can't just take this on the word of anonymous sources in the Washington Post. If the CIA's attitude is, look, we're still gathering information, we're still trying to get the fullest picture available, fine, but in that case, don't leak to the Post, right? You know, if we're going to make actual, genuine decisions based on this, we need to have the full story. And even though those of us outside the intelligence community don't know the precise, oh, this source is good and this source is bad or something like that, we need as complete an explanation as possible. And if that requires declassifying some information, it may require that. We can't just take an accusation of this magnitude at face value. We need a full kind of explanation of this from our leaders. And the idea that, you know, well, this is floating around in the public. Clearly somebody in our ranks is leaking this to the news. But we don't have time to brief Congress, or we're not willing to brief Congress at this time, does not add to public confidence on this. It seems like a really avoidable mistake. Because you don't say to Devin Nunes, no, nah, we're not telling you. You could say, we can't tell you yet. We're working on it. We'll give you a full briefing, you know, ASAP or something like that. But it really is a lingering problem there. The idea that the agency could be playing politics or somebody within it could be willing to tell the public things, but not willing to tell leaders in Congress information.
Yeah. You think John Podesta is going to get his electors intel briefing in the next few days?
Ah, that's a good point. Fair point.
If he does, then Devin Nunes' head will explode.
Yeah.
And rightly so.
God forbid that scenario comes to pass, Greg. He probably could use something like donor's trust, couldn't he?
He could. Yeah. I mean, it's a good time for him to use it at the end of the year anyway. But if he's in danger of his head exploding, he should really have his affairs in order. It's the end of the year.
Sorry, Congressman Nunes. That's an awkward transition. None of us want to see your head explode.
Metaphorically only. It's the end of the year when almost one-third of all charitable giving occurs. Do you have a plan in place to make sure your charitable giving gets done easily and in alignment with your values? That's where Donors Trust comes in. Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, plus additional donor privacy. Privacy is at a premium these days. That's a good thing. But only Donors Trust shares your commitment to conservative principles.
A donor-advised fund at Donors Trust can start with your fully tax-deductible gift of only $10,000. Donors Trust clients are united in the belief that private philanthropy does a better job of improving the nation than government. So if you believe in using charity to promote liberty, then you owe it to yourself to look at Donors Trust.
Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment-free prospectus. There is no commitment. You'll learn how a donor-advised fund works and how it can simplify your giving, save you in taxes, that's always nice, and protect your giving in new ways. You'll also receive bonus content to help you be more strategic in your giving. So visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download a free copy of our helpful guide. There's no commitment. donorstrust.org/ricochet. And Jim, while we're just talking about whether the Electoral College will get its intel briefing, they're already getting a briefing from some very, very important people. Hollywood celebrities, because if there's anything regular Americans want to hear, it's the political thoughts of celebrities. Well, they're out with a new message specifically to Republican electors. Just a couple days here now before the Electoral College meets on Monday. I believe it's a group called Unite for America, and it features the likes of notable moderate political figures like Martin Sheen, Deborah Messing, that's Grace from Will and Grace, right? James Cromwell, who, of course, was Dudley Smith in L.A. Confidential, as well as several other movies he's known for. And then the prominence of the celebrities falls off a cliff from there. But here's a couple of clips from the video as they reach out to Republican electors, and Martin Sheen begins here.
Republican members of the Electoral College, this message is for you. As you know, our founding fathers built the Electoral College to safeguard the American people from the dangers of a demagogue and to ensure that the presidency only goes to someone who is to an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications.
An eminent degree. Someone who is highly qualified for the job.
The Electoral College was created specifically to prevent an unfit candidate from becoming president.
And then the celebrities want to make sure that you know, Republican electors, that just because you don't vote for Trump doesn't mean you have to vote for Hillary.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
As you know, the Constitution gives electors the right to vote for any eligible person.
Any eligible person, no matter which party they belong to.
But it should certainly be someone you consider especially competent.
Especially competent to serve as President of the United States of America.
BJ Honeycutt from MASH. Mike Farrell also in that second clip there. So, Jim, I'm sure a lot of Republican minds will be changed by Martin Sheen encouraging them to vote for somebody else. Obviously, if Republicans were trying something like this, if there was any sort of controversy, had Hillary won, they'd be mocked roundly, and rightly so. What do you make of this last-ditch attempt?
Well, look, if former President Josiah Bartlett doesn't change your mind... Look, I say this as a never Trump guy. First of all, I find the great irony in the idea of forming an organization called Unite for America. And they believe the best way to unite the country is to not ratify the guy who won the election and to elect the guy who won 306 electoral votes. Right? I mean, like complete oblivion. Like, you know, we can safely joke about this, Greg, knowing that they're not going to go through with this. But I mean, could you imagine if they did? A lot of Trump supporters would be, when I say violently angry, I mean genuinely violently angry, and you might see something akin to an insurrection. You probably would see something horrifically violent, heaven forbid, but you know, you'd see a sudden resurgence of the militia movement and an emphasis that the electors had genuinely stolen the election. And we can argue about whether this is what the founders had in mind. But I love the fact that there's this, you know, one, I suppose I should give them a couple molecules of credit for saying, I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton. Good, because Republican electors ain't going to do that, pal. But I think there are some who do want to see this come to pass, including you and I used to joke about Jim Moran, my former congressman back where I used to live in Virginia. His successor, Don Beyer, is now saying that, look, if we don't get to the bottom of this, Trump will be an illegitimate president. Greg, what was it, like a month ago that saying the results were illegitimate was like the worst thing you possibly could do? It was a crime against democracy. It was a crime against America itself. When Trump was making these rumblings and it looked bad, wasn't that the worst thing a human being could possibly do?
Yes.
And now all of a sudden, no big deal. No, it's cool for a congressman to say the president's illegitimate and the election's hacked and all that stuff. I'm really struck by the fact that, because also in that video, there's no mention of who should be this alternative president. It's not like they're saying, look, we can't stand Trump, vote Pence. That might actually persuade, you know, I don't think you'll see more than a handful of electors be fatalists. But you could say, okay, you know, Trump is uniquely bad, but the guy who he picked to be a heartbeat away from the presidency is qualified. Let's go with him. Probably the perfect ending to an unbelievably surreal year, Greg. Just today, Keith Olbermann, who you and I mocked earlier this week,
yes,
has released a video from his fortified compound, it appears, that basically is begging for a Democrat and Republican electors alike to unite in a coalition to make Mitt Romney, John McCain, or Evan McMullen president of the United States. Greg, if you told me Keith Olbermann would be begging America to make Mitt Romney the president, I haven't had time to go back and check to see what Olbermann did, but I'm guessing it's all like, you know, Mitt Romney is the worst human being, blah, 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 you know, and John McCain and blah, 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 racist, blah, 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 you know. But now they love him. Now he's fine. Now they're great. And he wants a moderate Democrat, too, to be vice president.
Of course.
And I think a pony under his Christmas tree. Did I get that, Keith? Like while we're wishing and dreaming, I'm really hoping Rogue One is good and that Disney does not screw up the Star Wars movies. Now they're churning out one movie a year. Anyway, so it's kind of this bizarre wish fulfillment. I suppose you could see this as part of the Kubler-Ross stages of dealing with a presidency from Hollywood liberals. But the idea, well, we really don't like this person, so we should pick somebody else, and we should get, you know, it kind of represents, somebody put it very well yesterday. Do you know how Democrats believe the election should operate, Greg?
Democrats always win?
Well, as you were saying, we should hold the vote, and then they decide what the rules are for picking the winner are going to be. Because sometimes it's the popular vote, sometimes it's this. Wasn't the electoral crime like 2 weeks ago the greatest crime against humanity?
Yes, it was undermining democracy.
It's a duty to choose somebody else besides the person who actually won. So there you go. That's where we are, and seems like an appropriate way for the election cycle to come to a crashing end.
I think it's got to be somewhat gratifying for Mitt to realize that Democrats never really thought he was a cancer-causing corporate raider who hates dogs. It just happened to be the rhetoric at the time that they thought was mighty convenient. But now they think Mitt Romney is the greatest thing on earth, at least compared to Trump. So,
like, where was all this love, huh? Where was all this tributes to my decency back when I needed it, you hacks? some people noticed yesterday he said to Harry Reid, the Senate is a better place without him. Good riddance. And, you know, like, that's like a profane tirade in Mormon.
Jim, a fascinating way to once again watch the Democrats be completely unable to accept facts and results. But I guess we shouldn't be too surprised. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And a quick reminder to visit our friends at Donors Trust. Visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download a free copy of their helpful prospectus, No Commitment, donorstrust.org/ricochet. And tune in on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.